This afternoon I'm reading from Hebrews 2, chapter 2, verse 5. It is not to angels that he has subjected the world to come about which we are speaking, but there is a place where someone has testified. What is a man that you are mindful of him? The son of man that you care for him? You made him a little lower than the angels. You crowned him with glory and honour and put everything under his feet. In putting everything under him, God left nothing that is not subject to him. Yet at present we do not see everything subject to him. But we see Jesus, who is made a little lower than the angels, now crowned with glory and honour because he suffered death so that by the grace of God he might taste death for everyone. In bringing many sons to glory, it was fitting that God, for whom and through whom everything exists, should make the author of their salvation perfect through suffering. Both the one who makes men holy and those who makes men holy. Sorry. Both the one who makes men holy and those who are made holy are of the same family. So Jesus is not ashamed to call them brothers. He says, I will declare your name to my brothers. In the presence of the congregation, I will sing your praises. And again, I will put my trust in him. And again, he says, here am I and the children God has given me. Since the children have flesh and blood, he too shared in their humanity, so that by his death he might destroy him who holds the power of death, that is, the devil, and free those who all their lives were held in slavery by their fear of death. For surely it is not angels he helps, but Abraham's descendants. For this reason, he had to be made like his brothers in every way, in order that he might become a merciful and faithful high priest in service of God, and that he might make atonement for those sins of people. Because he himself suffered when he was tempted, he is able to help those who are being tempted.
Thanks, Anne-Marie. Good afternoon, and great to see you here today. And definitely a happy Mother's Day again from me to all the mums, and to my mum if she ends up listening to this online. Love you, Mum, and happy Mother's Day. Hope you enjoyed the flowers that I sent you on Friday. To Kylie, who is here today, the mother to my children. But I also want to just acknowledge the spiritual mothers that operate within this church. You know, really, way before I came onto team here with the pastoral team, really since we joined this church, there's just been a bunch of women who have provided care and mothering to me and my family in just a beautiful way. And just by the way they care and they love and they pray and they look out for our family. So thank you to you also. You do an amazing job, and I just want to say, don't give up. Don't give up doing that sort of thing. Not that you would be able to, even if you wanted to, because it's just who you are and it's how God has made you. So we're going to shift gear a little bit now. We've celebrated a Mother's Day and had some fun with the kids and mums, and we've looked at our May Mission Month and heard from Carol and the projects that we're supporting this month. But now we're going to come back to our series from the book of Hebrews. And really, this is just our second week in this series, and we're going to pick it up again in a couple of weeks' time after some May Mission Month messages. But really, we're looking at this book right now just to be encouraged in our faith, just to push on in our faith and our discipleship up in and out, and just to continue pursuing Jesus. And today we're going to wrestle really briefly with just kind of three issues or questions that we often have sort of rolling around in our minds, or at least I do. It's sort of, this is a little bit of a confession time. And maybe sometimes those questions or those issues actually cause us to doubt in our faith, to struggle, and to maybe even think about, like the Hebrew Christians were, to think about drifting away or giving up. So let me pose those few questions to you, and then we can just jump right into seeing what Hebrews says in response to just spur us on today in our faith. And the first question is just that lingering sort of thought that we sometimes have about God's rule upon the world and why there is still so much brokenness and evil and suffering that surrounds us. Am I the only one that ever sort of wonders about that? Yep, looks like it. That's okay. I'll own it. But this, just that whole question around God's authority and rule upon the earth, we're going to look at that today. And the second one is just this question around what God thinks about me and whether God really accepts me and loves me as the Bible says he does. And particularly when I mess up in some way or I fail at something that I've committed to do, we can sort of we can come to that place where we either intentionally or unintentionally just put some distance between ourselves and God, thinking that we're not worthy to carry his name as a follower of Jesus. Has anyone experienced that? Yes, we're getting more hands. Okay, I'm on the right track. And the third question, and this is a little bit linked to the first one, but it's more sort of personal, is just where God is when we go through those tough times in life, when we suffer or when we have trials or during those times of testing for us personally. And these are all thoughts or questions that we can have just rolling around in the back of our mind, in our spirit from time to time that might just cause us to struggle in our faith. And I'm fairly sure they're some of the questions that the Hebrew community were asking as this little pocket of the early church. And what the writer to the Hebrews wants to say today is this: just don't give up. Just keep going in your faith. And we're going to hear that message to us today. So can you pray with me as we jump into this and see what this word has to say? Loving God, we just want to thank you for this opportunity to be encouraged and strengthened in our faith today. We thank you that this is what your word does as we hear it and as we apply it to our lives. So may you spur on each of us gathered here today as your spirit is at work molding us and making us to be more like your son Jesus. God, this is your work. And we just pray that we'd be open to all that you have to say to us today. In Jesus' name, amen. So last week, for those that were here, we were reminded to focus on the reasons that we have for belief and confidence in Jesus. And as we approach today's passage, chapter 2, it comes on the back of this warning right at the start of chapter 2, which we didn't have read out to us, but I just want to point it out now. And the warning at the start of chapter 2 is to pay attention to what we have heard so that we don't drift away. And this is the whole message that we're going to keep coming back to again and again throughout this series as we hear this message to not give up, to stop drifting away. You know, about two or three times now I've come into a wharf in my boat and I've forgotten to tie it off. And I'm walking up the wharf or the plank to get back to the shore. And then something sort of twigs in the back of my mind that I didn't tie my boat off. And I look back and sure enough, my boat is drifting away. And one of those times, I just ran down the wharf and just leaped and actually was able to just grab onto the bow of the boat and then had to work out how I was going to get in the boat while I'm hanging off the bow. But all that just to say that to stop drifting away, we actually need to be tied to something permanent and fixed, something strong and sure. And what the writer here is saying is that we need to actually tie ourselves to those things that we have heard so we do not drift away. And in this section in chapter 2 and the first part of chapter 3, the author begins actually tackling some big ideas. And I've already sort of flagged what some of those might be. And the author does this just really trying to challenge their minds and their thinking. And the commentary goes right from the creation of the present world right through to the glories of the world that will come. So even in this chapter here, we just span this whole breadth of the gospel. And in doing so, the writer actually allows us to ask this first question that I posed. Who is actually ruling things right now? I mean, we see so much good, don't we, around our world. We see cures for diseases that we didn't have 10 or 20 or 30 years ago. And we see treatment for cancers that are making really good progress. So the prognosis for those things is really positive. And we see technology that's allowing us to do things we never thought possible as humans. But at the same time, we see so much brokenness and so much evil perpetrated from person upon person, and it breaks our hearts as we see that. And I imagine the Hebrew Christians like us are sort of looking around and questioning the reality of this new kingdom that Jesus promised. They'd be looking on going, well, look what's going on out there. It's just chaos. And they didn't even have Eurovision back then. Imagine how that would have messed with their minds, watching what goes on there. But seriously, it's a little bit like if you had to walk into my garage at home at the moment. When you walk into my garage, it's been chaos really since Rachel's 16th birthday, which is over a year ago now. But as you walk into my garage, you can actually see that someone used to rule over that space, that actually there was some form of order and function. There was a place for everything. But it's very much a work in progress, isn't it, Kylie? Yes, it is. Is anyone else's garage in need of a second coming like mine is? Yeah. It's just a disaster. And this is what it can be like sometimes as we look upon the world, and it can look like a bit of a debacle, and we actually have this question going on, who's actually in charge here? And to tackle this confusion amongst the believers, the writer actually takes us back to Psalm 8, which kind of, or very much makes it look like we're in control of the world. And the psalmist is recalling in Psalm 8, Genesis 1 and 2, where everything was actually subject to us and where God had created us to have dominion and have rule over the world. You can pick it up if you just read a few of the verses from Psalm 8. Verse 4, "What is mankind that you are mindful of him, human beings that you care for them? You have made them a little lower than the angels and crowned them with glory and honor." Verse 6, "You made them rulers over the works of your hands, and you put everything under their feet." And then we jump to today's passage, Hebrews chapter 2 and verse 8, and we read here, "In putting everything under them, God left nothing that is not subject to them." It sounds kind of wonderful, doesn't it, that we would get to be to rule the world, that we would get to be the boss over everything. And we have that sort of question with young kids sometimes. We ask them, you know, "Jasmine, what would you do if you could rule the world?" And from really young kids, you get sort of those answers, well, I would make sure that everyone had free access to as much chocolate and sweets as they so desire. And that would sort of, you know, bring about world peace. And then as kids get a little bit older and a bit more rational thinking, they actually start to have some good answers where they would actually say, well, if I ruled the world, I would make sure that world poverty, you know, was no more, that everyone had enough proper food to eat and to drink. So we have this sort of, you know, sort of fantasy about what it would be like if we were to rule the world. And in our moments of inspiration, we actually hypothesize that we would do it really well, that if we got to rule the world or our nation, that we would blitz it. We sort of delude ourselves that it would be easy and that our plan for humankind would be the one that everyone actually says, yes, you've nailed it, Brendan. That's how to rule the world. But then reality hits, doesn't it? As a family, we sit down and try and work out amongst the five of us what we're going to have for dinner. And we come up with five different options, and World War III breaks out, you know, amongst our family. Or we try to start to, you know, to grow a new herb or veggie garden at home, and we forget to water it for a few days, and the whole thing just dies. Sue Smith would not let that happen. Or we start the latest diet, don't we, or the latest fitness program, and we last one meal, or we last one session at the gym, and then we give up. And we actually realize the awful truth and the reality of our situation once we start to recall some of these things, that we can't even exercise rule or dominion over ourselves or over our families that well, or over our household, let alone the whole world. Which is why, and this is what I've been coming to, which is why this is really, really good news. The writer in the last part of verse 8 says, yet at present we do not see everything subject to them. That's us. The world is not under our control. And instead it frustrates us and it rebels against us at almost every turn. And the writer to the Hebrews says, rather than that diminishing our faith or undermining our faith, actually this is really, really good news. Because God has put someone in place to rule who will do a much, much better job than any of us in this room or all of us in this room together could ever do. And of course, that person is Jesus. God has put Jesus as the ruler over this world. And if we run back to Psalm 8, verse 5 actually captures this as you can actually read this looking forward towards Jesus who would come. And the versions that were read out actually show the different readings here. You have made him, Jesus, a little lower than the angels for a time. You have crowned him with glory and honor, and you put everything under his feet. Friends, this is fantastic news right here. And it helps us to explain why things are not the way that we would like them to be and why we wrestle so much with that. But friends, we follow the one who didn't just shout instructions from heaven. The one who refused to abandon us when we chose to go it alone. The one who came in flesh and in blood to walk with us in the struggles and the challenges and in the tests of life. We follow the one who didn't ignore our rebellion, but who provided a merciful and faithful high priest who we read would make an atonement for the sins of the people. And all of this, friends, is good news. That Jesus was made fully human that he might come and lead in the ushering of this renewal of all things. And that he might take us on this journey towards glory. So when we look around at all the brokenness and we fall down due to our own brokenness, we're reminded here today not to give up. Why? Because Jesus is at work even when we have cause to doubt. And in his letter to the Corinthian church, the Apostle Paul acknowledges that we actually won't see things clearly right now. Chapter 1 Corinthians 13, 12, for now we actually only see a reflection as in a mirror. Then we shall see face to face. Now I only know in part, but then in glory I shall know fully, just as I am known. You see, friends, Jesus is leading the way, and it's only as we look on to the world and all that brokenness through the eyes of Jesus that actually it starts to make sense. And actually we start to see clearly what is going on. And this is what the author of Hebrews is reminding us of again today, and due to this, not to give up. And due to this, to take hold of all that he has called you to know and to be and to take hold of, not just in this life, but in a life that we hope towards. So this leads us to our second question, the Hebrews most likely and we certainly are prone to wrestle with. And if left unchecked, it might actually cause us to start to withdraw or to give up. And it's this whole idea of God's grace and presence being with us or not with us when we fail or when we mess up in some way. Now remember, I just want to point out that the Hebrews were this small little household church of Jewish converts that were living in a township on the outskirts of Jerusalem. So their legacy, or their ancestors' legacy, the generation that they had come from, maybe one or two just generations removed, was all tied up with the temple and with visiting the temple regularly. It was all tied up with the priests offering absolution to them. It was all tied up with sacrifices being offered on a regular basis for the forgiveness of sins. And here's these young Jewish Christian converts finding themselves living in this town under the new covenant, where they no longer were reliant on religion. They were no longer reliant on that structured faith pathway that they were used to. But now they were in relationship with a person. So they were actually in this movement from religion to relationship. And that can actually be a bit of an unnerving space to be in. And I imagine that was actually messing with their heads somewhat as they come to terms with what it meant to be right with God, as they were practicing this as this little Christian community outside of Jerusalem. So still in touch with the Jewish community that they probably knew so well and they were once a part of, but now leading this new life in pursuit of Christ. So imagine, like I do, they were actually wrestling also with how this grace now operates, now that the law of God had been fulfilled in this person of Jesus. And they wouldn't be the only one, would they, that's ever wrestled with this thing called grace. And all these thoughts can go through our minds when we're in that space of uncertainty. Like, am I really worthy of God's love? Is this the grace really sufficient for someone like me? Could God really forgive me and set me right with him? And rather than answer those questions with truth and what they have heard, remember, start of chapter 2, the temptation for the Hebrew Christians was just to go back to religion, to go back to what they knew so well, or to give up completely and just to walk away. But the writer here says, hang on just one minute. The writer here says this work of Jesus is even more deep and thorough and complete than you can even imagine. Not only is this relationship, but this is also family. And we read about that in this passage. We read that in Jesus, God showed that he is so committed to us as his followers that he adopts us as his sons and daughters. And he says, I'm going to create this household, this spiritual household, with Jesus the Son as the head. And I have paid for each of you to belong to this household, this family. So verse 11, we get a touch of this. Both the one who makes people holy, Jesus, and those who are made holy, us, are of the same family. And here's the clincher. Here's the clincher. There's no more shame. There's no more shame. I meet a lot of people who are not feeling worthy, who have that, who actually speak that out, that God could never love me, who are feeling low as a follower of Jesus. And here we read, Jesus is not ashamed to call them, to call you, brothers and sisters. And in fact, he goes even further than that. Verse 12. He says, I will declare your name to my brothers and sisters. I will declare your name to the wider family. In the assembly, I'll actually sing your praises. How good is that? I have this vision of Jesus singing about that 96.5 centimeter flathead I caught a few years ago. More likely the work of God that I'm undertaking. He will sing my praises. Carol talked about this one line that stood out as she shared today, that in Jesus we'll be elevated to this position of honor. What a beautiful thing to speak over our lives. This is how thorough the work of salvation is in my life and in your life. So the writer says, don't give up on the basis of not feeling worthy or acceptable in God's eyes. God actually loves you more than you can ever comprehend or understand. And we can rest in that. We can rest in that, that our salvation is secure in Jesus. So much so, and this brings us to our third question, that death itself has been defeated in this man. So where is God then when the tough times come, when suffering arrives, when trials and temptations and tribulation come upon us? And this is the tough one, isn't it? This is the tough one in our community of faith. This is a tough one for the wider community that we interact with. And their question, the way they would phrase it, is why does God allow that? And we're not going to tackle that. That's a series or a message in itself. But the writer to the Hebrews meets this issue head on, describing this struggle we have with death. Let's look at what the writer says once again. Verse 14, since the children have flesh and blood, he too shared in their humanity so that by his death he might break the power of him who holds the power of death, that is the devil, and free those who all of their lives were held in slavery by the fear of death. This is the fear, isn't it, that hangs over humanity. That one day we will die and that life will be no more. And right here, the writer to the Hebrews says loud and clear to us, the power of death has been broken. That no longer do we live as slaves under this fear. And yes, we'll still see sickness, and yes, we'll still see death and suffering. Yes, it breaks my heart, just as it breaks your heart. Yes, we'll still go through trials and times that'll be testing. But we do so knowing that we've been freed, that we're no longer slaves to that fear that death holds. And we do so knowing this final promise, that we have a helper in that space. Because he himself suffered when he was tempted, he is able to help those who are being tempted. We have a friend who's able to help us when those tough times come, when we experience those serious illnesses, when we know suffering in some form or amongst our family, when those temptations come that challenge our commitment to faith, and all of those things will happen if we live long enough. But the author says when all of that happens, there's only one place to look. And it sounds so simple, doesn't it? But it's so true. We need to look to Jesus, our high priest, who says to us, don't give up, because we're on this road to glory. Friends, I have the privilege of sitting with some of you and listening and journeying with you in the various challenges that you're going through in life. And there's some unwelcome cancers and other sickness that's being treated amongst our body at the moment. There's mental health challenges that we live with ongoing. There's relationship obstacles that we're working through. There's friends and family that we our hearts break because they're so closed to faith. There's still so many struggles in life. And my honest answer is I don't have anything to offer to you when I listen to those struggles except this one man, Jesus. It's the only place we have to look, because he himself suffered when he was tempted. He's able to help those who are being tempted. Once again, that is good news. N.T. Wright says this really well. He says, there's nothing we face today or tomorrow or the next day in which Jesus cannot sympathize, help, and rescue us, and through which he cannot forge a way to God's new world. That is the hope that we hold on to when we go through tough times in life. And it's Jesus that we're holding on to, that he might forge a way to this new world that God is calling us to in glory. There's nothing that he is our sustainer and our comforter and our helper can't help us face. We haven't got time today to unpack this first part of chapter 3, which was really supposed to be part of what we're looking at today, but there it is. I'm not going to look at it. It's too long and too detailed to unpack now as I wrap up, but we're reminded in the first part of chapter 3 that Jesus was greater than Moses. And why does the writer to the Hebrews point this out? Well, Moses was a great servant of the people of God, a great servant. But Jesus, as the Son, is even greater because he heads up this household of faith. And not only is Jesus greater than Moses, but in reminding us just how great Jesus is, the writer here is saying that Jesus is greater than your doubts that cause you to want to give up. Jesus is greater than your fears. We'll leave it there. Jesus is greater than the evil that still burdens our world. Jesus is greater than our temptations and our sin. And Jesus is greater than, you fill in the rest of that sentence, Jesus is greater than whatever challenge you are going through at the moment, personally or in your family or in your marriage or in your workplace. I really believe this, that Jesus is greater. And the writer here summarizes all that we've been looking at through chapter 2 with these three great take-homes to leave us with today. Because Jesus is greater, we need to fix our thoughts on him. When we see through his eyes those things going on around us and to us and in us, we see things differently, don't we? He reminds us that God is the builder of everything. God is the builder of everything. So we need to stand on that truth. And finally, he reminds us that Christ is faithful. And we just need to be reminded of that constantly, don't we? Of Christ's faithfulness. And when we remind ourselves of his faithfulness in our lives and in other people's lives and in his church, we are encouraged, aren't we? And because of all this, because of Jesus, the writer says we can hold firmly and to our confidence and in the hope in which we glory. That's my encouragement to you today. And as you do that, don't even think about giving up. Hold firmly. Let's pray. As the band comes to lead